Today's topic is, what's the difference between 32 and 64-bit Java? Today's presenter is Andrew Hall. Andrew studied electronics with artificial intelligence at the University of Southampton before joining IBM's Java Technology Center in 2004. Andrew spent 2 years in the Java system test team concentrating on test automation and load testing Java runtimes. For the past 2 years, he has been a member of the Java service team specializing in fixing out-of-memory conditions, performance problems, and misbehaving applications. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Andrew.
Very much, Kathy.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to my WST presentation. I'd like to start by moving on to slide 2, which is the objectives of this session. At the end of this session, I would like you to be able to understand the difference between 32 and 64-bit Java runtimes, particularly to understand the native memory limitations of the 32-bit Java runtime on AX, Windows, and Linux, and to understand the reduced performance of 64-bit Java runtimes compared to their 32-bit equivalents. Moving on to slide 3, the outline for this session is we'll start by looking by what we mean by 32 and 64-bit. We will take a look at address spaces and native memory. We'll then move on to have a look at address spaces for 32-bit Windows, Linux, and AX. We'll then contrast those with 64-bit address spaces before moving on to have a look at the performance of 64-bit Java runtimes and the considerations for application scaling. Moving on to slide 4, let's have a bit of a think about what we mean by 32 or 64-bit. So the number of bits is associated with the underlying processor architecture of the machine that you're running on, and it refers typically to the width of the general purpose processor register. Now, these are the memory elements used for basic integer math, and it defines the largest integer that can be used in a single calculation. At the same time, it also defines the largest memory address that you can use, and that defines the range of memory that can be addressed. So a 32-bit address allows you to address up to 4 gigabytes of memory. A 64-bit address lets you address up to 16 exabytes of memory. Now, 16 exabytes is an absolutely massive quantity. And to kind of give you some idea of scale, my favorite comparison for this is that if you take the 17 million books in the U.S. Library of Congress and you digitize them all and you store all their text and their formatting, you end up with about 136 terabytes of data. So to fill 16 exabytes of data, you need 117,000 copies of the U.S. Library of Congress. So it's an absolutely massive number. And the exception to this rule about general purpose registers for the purpose of this presentation is System 390. So Z, the 32-bit or 31-bit Z system has 32-bit registers, but for historical reasons, has 31-bit memory addresses, which means that you can address up to 2 gigabytes with a 31-bit number. So, moving on to slide 5, we're going to have a look at the limitations of 32-bit Java runtimes now. And essentially, the limitation of your 32-bit runtime is kind of what you'd expect. You've only got a limited amount of memory, this 4 gigabyte range, and you've got to store all the data inside that Java needs and all the data that your application needs inside this range of memory. So we're going to start by moving on to slide 6 with a discussion of native address spaces. Now, the size of an address, so your 32 or your 64 bits, defines an address space, which is a region of addressable memory. And when we talk about native address spaces or native memory, we're using the word native to distinguish it from Java resources. So native memory is memory that the operating system gives to its processes, rather than Java heap memory, which is something that is a virtualized quantity that the Java runtime provides for Java applications. Now, each operating system process has a virtual address space, which is defined by the size of the pointer or the memory address on that platform. Now, each process has to be able to reference data for the application, which is typically called user space, and there's also usually a range for the operating system, which is called kernel space. So programs, and such as Java, have to be able to fit all of their data within user space. And so that is the limiting factor for the amount of memory you can use in Java runtime. So what we're going to do is move on to slide 7 and have a look at what Java uses native memory for. What are we trying to cram into this user space? So the most significant user of native memory for a Java runtime is normally the Java heap. And from a native memory perspective, it is allocated as a contiguous chunk of memory, and it occupies the maximum heap size from startup. So the Java garbage collector is usually configured with a minimum heap size and a maximum heap size. And there's various cunning algorithms that allow the garbage collector to use the smallest amount of its range of memory to store Java objects in, for usually efficiency and performance reasons. However, from the point of view of native memory, we have to reserve the full size of the heap from startup because there's no way for us to incrementally allocate more memory for the heap. So we occupy the minus X MX value from startup out of your native memory. Threads occupy memory. Each thread has to have a stack which stores the local variables for that as that thread executes code. Now, Java threads have both a native stack and a Java stack. But so the important limitation is that threads occupy native memory, and applications that use large quantities of threads will consume significantly more native memory than those that use one or two. The just-in-time compiler, the JIT, is part of the Java runtime that compiles Java bytecode into native machine code, and that's where the performance of modern Java runtimes comes from. Now, a JIT compiler, its source data, the bytecodes, are loaded in native memory. It will use some native memory as a transitory thing as it actually does its compile, but all of its output, its executable code, is also stored in native memory. So applications that have large amounts of classes, large amounts of code, can occupy a significant amount of native memory just by the JIT compiling it. Now, classes and class loaders, so class data, the bytecodes, and the class structure, has to be stored in native memory for the Java runtime to be able to use it. And how this is stored kind of varies between implementation, but from IBM to Java, from Java 5 onwards, these are stored in native memory buffers. So loading more and more classes uses more and more native memory. So JNI, the Java native interface, is the means to plug native code into a Java runtime. So you can run C or Fortran or Ada alongside your Java code. Now, any native code that is sharing the process with Java, any JNI code, if that's performing malloc or news in C++, that will take memory away from the Java runtime. There is also the Java native interface itself, the functions that the native code calls into the Java runtime. Some of those use native memory as part of their normal function, particularly from Java 5 onwards for the IBM platforms. If you are accessing a Java array from native code, that data has to be copied into native memory. You can't access it directly on the heap. So it is possible to use large quantities of native memory by accessing large arrays from JNI. The Java NIO system, which is introduced at Java 1.4, allows you to store bytes in native memory directly using a thing called a direct Java NIO byte buffer. Now, WebSphere itself makes fairly significant use of these, and each worker thread inside WebSphere has two byte buffers, direct byte buffers. So having lots and lots of worker threads inside WebSphere, for example, can use significant amounts of native memory. And on top of all these uses I've already listed, there's kind of what I'd like to call Java runtime data allocations, which are performed to allow the Java runtime to interpret and execute code. Now, the reason I've listed all these is all these things have to fit inside user space. So as we look at available user space on the different platforms, you ought to keep in mind that absolutely everything on this list has to fit inside the user space. So moving now on to slide 8, we're going to start looking at the address spaces of Windows, Linux, and AIX. Now this slide shows the native address space for Windows 32-bit. Now when you start talking about native address space, you typically end up drawing these kinds of diagrams. So here we have the 4 GB range, and for Windows 32-bit, it is split into two equal parts, a 2 GB user space and a 2 GB kernel space. And for reasons that will become clear in a minute, it's significant the libraries, the shared libraries, DLLs that Windows uses, which are part of Java, part of any application you might be running, and part of the operating system itself, they are all loaded up near the 2 gigabyte line. DLLs on Windows have a preferred loading address, and when a DLL is loaded, if that address is free, it will be loaded at a location. Now, this means that we end up with a block of libraries up at 2 gigabytes, and on the next slide, it'll become clear why that's important. The other thing that can be a bit counterintuitive for a 32-bit Windows or any Intel 32-bit platform is that you may have bought this Windows or Linux 32-bit box, and you've just it allows you to plug 32 or 64 gigabytes of RAM into the machine, and yet each process can only, from this diagram, each process can only actually use 2 gigabytes for its own data. The reason for this is that around the time of the Pentium Pro, Intel expanded the width of the memory address bus, so the set of wires that connect the processor to physical memory. So it's actually 36 bits wide, not 32. And 36 bits allowed you to address your 64 gigabytes. But the changes weren't made so that your general purpose registers were wide enough to be able to use this as a memory address for every process, mostly for backwards compatibility reasons. If you have more than 4 gigabytes on your system, what it means is your operating system, so your Windows or your Linux, can map lots and lots of processes onto this larger memory space. But each process cannot meaningfully actually deal with anything more than its user space. So when Windows NT was originally designed, this 2 gigabyte split was quite reasonable. 2 gigabytes was a lot of memory, but as times have moved on and memory has become cheaper, having a 2 gigabyte limit on your data proved to be something of a limitation. So, moving on to slide 9, this shows the memory layout for Windows 32-bit with the 3GB switch set. Now, the 3GB switch is a flag that is supported under certain versions of Windows, typically the server versions, that you set in the boot config, and for programs that are compiled with a particular flag, including the IBM JDK, it means that the process has a 3 gigabyte user space and a 1 gigabyte kernel space. Now, unfortunately, as mentioned previously, the libraries have a preferred loading address, and they load up around the 2 gigabyte line, which means that we don't have 3 gigabytes of contiguous storage. And so what you might first think as a great opportunity to have really large heaps on Windows really isn't, because you've still only got the 2 gigabyte contiguous space that you had before. So it's useful if you have a Java application that has a modest size heap and lots of other native memory demands, so you're creating lots and lots of threads, for example, but it doesn't let you have massive Java heaps. Now, the other thing to be aware of is that by increasing the user space by 50%, we've actually chopped the kernel space in half. Now, the kernel space holds data like I/O buffers, information about processes, information about users that are currently logged onto the system. And by reducing that space, you can get some strange side effects as part of the operating system as a whole. So what things I'm aware of is you can see I/O performance can become very poor. You can get it so that, for example, a Windows terminal server refuses to log any new users in because it hasn't got the space to allocate in the kernel region to store information for that user. So this 3GB switch is useful for certain applications. It isn't without its drawbacks, but it's something to be aware of. Moving on to slide 10. This is the native address space for Linux 32-bit. Now, unlike Windows, shared libraries on Linux can load pretty much whatever they like. So we have a 3 gigabyte user space and a 1 gigabyte kernel space, and the user space is not divided or chopped up. And this means that if you can have heaps that are greater than 2 gigabytes, and you can approach having heaps of 2.5 gigabytes maybe, depending on what your other native memory requirements are. Now, in the original Linux kernel, written back in 1992, this was a fixed model. Again, as memories become cheaper, particularly with Intel 32-bit processors that can have vast quantities of memory plugged into them, the 3 gigabyte limit became something of a limitation. So they introduced what is called the huge mem kernel. So moving on to slide 11. The huge mem kernel is a custom kernel, which I believe Red Hat certainly ships with one. You can get one for most of the enterprise, and it expands the user space to fill the entire process address space. And it does this by having a separate address space for the kernel space. And this means that the area area that can be used by your process, the area that in our case can be used by Java, is just under 4 gigabytes, which means that you can have a greater than 3 gigabyte heap if you wish. The problem with this approach is that every time a system call is made, so every time we transition from our program, our Java program, into the kernel, so if we're doing file I/O or network operations, that kind of thing, we have to flush the entire memory system to load in the different address space of the kernel. And this means that system calls and particularly I/O can be quite slow when using the huge memory kernel. But that may be worth trading off given you've got more users. Now, 390, so Zlinux 31, uses a similar trick because Zlinux 31 only has a 2 gigabyte process address space. So splitting that into two bits would be kind of unpleasant. So it has a entire 2 gigabyte address space for user space and a 2 gigabyte address space for kernel space. However, you don't get the slow I/O on 390 because the architecture is designed to cope with dealing with multiple address spaces. So that's just the way that 390 works. It's also worth pointing out that if you are running a 32-bit process, so 32-bit Java on a 64-bit operating system, which is supported for WAS 6.1 from about 6-pack 11, I believe, you'll get your 4 gigabyte user space. But rather than having this dual address space system, you've basically got the bottom 4 gigabytes of a 64-bit address space. That's covered Linux. Moving on to slide 12, which is native memory on 32-bit AIX. Now, the memory model for AIX is very different to Linux and Windows, and it is based around the concept of a segment. So the 4 gigabyte address space is split into 16 256 meg segments, and each segment can be assigned a particular use. So the diagram on the screen at the moment shows what's called the default AIX memory model that came in when AIX was introduced. So segment 0 is used for kernel data, so it's a bit like the kernel space in Windows and Linux. Segment 1 is application text, so that's the executable code for your native application, such as Java. Segment 2 is marked stack and data. Now, this is essentially a native heap, so all native allocations will be formed out of segment 2. So you can malloc up to 256 megabytes of data. Segments 3 through C and E are available for shared or mapped storage. So if you're mapping in shared memory or you're mapping files into the address space, this is where it would be mapped in. And segments D and F are used for the shared library cache. Now, this, again, was fine when AIX was first invented. As it moved on and memory became cheap, having a 256 meg limit on what you could malloc became something of a bind. So around AIX 4, I believe, they introduced the large memory model. And so with a large memory model, you can actually annex some of this shared map storage up to 8 segments worth to be used for malloc data. And later, around AIX 5.1, they introduced the very large memory model, which allows up to 13 segments to be used for malloc data. And the boundary between the malloc data and the shared map storage actually becomes fluid. So you set a limit and which caps how many segments can be annexed for malloc data, but the actual the limit in process is dynamic. Now, from a Java perspective, Java always maps the heap, so it'll go in this white area. More usefully, Java looks after setting up the memory model for you, so you haven't got to worry about configuring the memory model yourself, which is done through environment variables or recompiling the Java launcher. The memory model is configured based on your maximum heap size, since the Java heap is normally the largest thing you need to fit into your native memory space. So if we move on to the next slide, slide 13. This slide shows you what the memory model for AIX looks like depending on which maximum heap size you set. So the top line shows the heap size for maximum heaps up to 2,304 megabytes. And this gives you a Java usable area of up to 2.75 gigabytes. Above that, the memory model is configured such that the segments D and F are no longer mapped in for use of the shared library cache. We take our own copy. And so Java can use up to 3.25 gigabytes of storage. Now, going beyond that, you can actually have maximum heap sizes beyond 3,072 megabytes. And at that point, then, all the native heap goes into segment 2, and the Java heap goes between segments 3 and F. Now, At this point, this means you can have a very, very large Java heap, but you're very, very constrained by what else you can. So all your other requirements, so classes, get data, JNI data, all have to fit in segment two. So this is an option for certain applications, but you're sailing pretty close to the wind at this point, and you could possibly run out of native heap. Moving on to slide 14. So at this point, we've covered the native memory and the native address spaces for AIX, Windows, and Linux. And from a 32-bit point of view, the restriction that you hit is that you've got to fit all of your data into the user spaces that we've just seen. And this means that your Java heap is going to be restricted to between maybe 1.5 gigabytes and 3 gigabytes, depending on which platform you're on. Moving on to 64-bit, the limitation for your address space is essentially gone. The sizes of user spaces, as we'll see in a minute, are so large that it's very, very difficult. It's your problem becomes how to afford or plug in enough physical memory. You're no longer restricted by the size of the address space. One bit of full disclosure is that most so-called 64-bit platforms don't have full 64-bit addresses yet. Some do, but some, for example, AMD 64, have a smaller address size. So in the case of AMD 64, it's 48-bit at the moment, but the architecture has a roadmap such that this can be increased when necessary. So if we move on to slide 15, here's a table of user spaces for some 64-bit operating systems, and this varies from sort of hundreds of gigabytes all the way up to CLinux 64, which allows you to have a full 8 exabyte user space. So this allows you to, the limitations for heap size, limitations for native memory are basically gone at this point for most practical applications. Moving on to slide 16. So this is our sort of summary of 64-bit Java. This 64-bit address space allows you to have a massive Java heap. I mean, I've worked with customers who've been working with 6, 8, 10, up to about 18 gigabytes at the moment, and getting respectable GC performance. Problem is that at Java 5, 64-bit can be around 20% slower than the corresponding 32-bit runtime. And the reasons for this we'll go into over the next few slides, but it essentially boils down to 64-bit objects are larger than 32-bit objects. So they occupy more space, and that reduces the memory system efficiency. And if you're porting from 32 to 64-bit, but you don't retune your garbage collector, the larger objects will cause higher heat consumption, and that's going to reduce your GC performance. Now, when we wrote these slides, the level 3 service team for Java, our gut feel was about 20 to 30% increase in object size for as an average increase. Since you wrote these slides, our feel has become more that you should probably budget for it getting as much bigger as 60 to 70% and then size your heap appropriately and then decrease it as part of your tuning exercise on there. So moving on to slide 17, we can take a look at why 64-bit objects are larger than 32-bit ones. So on top of this slide, we have a snippet of Java for our business object, which is a customer class. And our customer class consists of two integers and two object references. Now, an object reference, when it's on the heap, is essentially a pointer, a memory address. So that's going to be very tightly tied to the size of the memory address on your platform. So at the bottom of the slide, you can see our 32-bit object lined up against our ruler, and with a 32-bit header on it, and we've got two 32-bit pointers to the date and the string field, and then we've got two 32-bit integers. If we move that object on the 64-bit, we have our header still. Our pointers to the Java objects have now got twice as big, and our primitive fields are the same size. This means that to hold the same amount of data, we are now occupying 40% more space. Now, the internal of how the IBM runtime actually represents this data is slightly different than this, but this is the essential problem. As you move from 32 to 64-bit, your references get bigger. So, to have a look at how this might, if we move on to slide 18, this slide is from the WebSphere performance team, and it is the increase in Java usage for what's called our Trade 6 benchmark. Now, Trade 6 is a stock trading mock application, and this slide shows that running that on 32 and 64-bit, now on power, they saw a 60% increase in memory footprint, and on AMD, so 64-bit Intel, there was a 70% increase in heat consumption. Now, that's probably about as bad as it gets, but it's quite difficult, well, it's essentially impossible to predict at the moment how much bigger a given application will be before you move on to 64-bit, because it depends on the objects that make up the heap. So if your application builds large trees of objects that hold your data, then it is likely that you're going to see a very big increase because you've got a lot of references on there. If you hold all of your data in byte arrays, then it's probably going to be about the same size, because a 100-element byte array is the same size on 32-bit or 64-bit. Moving on to slide 19, this slide shows you the effect this object bloat, as we call it, has when migrating from 32 to 64-bit. On the left, we have our application on 32-bit, and there's our heap, which, if we say that is 50% occupied. Now, if we port that straight to 64-bit, but don't retune the garbage collector, so we use the same maximum heap size. If we get a 60% increase in object size, so our objects bloat by 60%, our heap is now going to be 80% occupied. And once you're looking at kind of 80% occupation for a Java heap, your GC performance is going to become very, very poor. So the only way to maintain the same percentage utilization, and therefore maintain a healthy garbage collector, is to increase your heap size in line with the increase in object size, which is what happens in the third column. Moving on to slide 20. This slide is another slide from our website performance team. And what it's showing is the difference in throughput of one of their benchmarks from 32 to 64-bit for, this is WebSphere 6.1, so based on Java 5. And what you can see here is that the 64-bit runtimes are between 11 and 35% slower. And the reason for this is that since our objects have now got bigger, but we're holding the same amount of data, effectively our data density has decreased. So in order to do the same amount of work, we have to touch more memory. And this makes the various memory caches that are part of the operating system, part of the hardware, less efficient. And what you can see down the bottom is that the chips with the larger caches, so Intel Tulsa, 2 megabyte level 2, 16 megabyte level 3, so a larger cache allows the processor to cope better with this reduced data density, this requiring more memory to be pulled onto the processor to do the same amount of work. Moving on to slide 21. So, given what we've seen so far, what does this mean when we're designing a deployment? Well, if you need to hold large amounts of data in memory at the same time, and you need, in order to do one transaction, you need a heap of 4 gigabytes, then your only choice is 64-bit. It is the only way you can hold enough data in memory. If each individual transaction doesn't require huge amounts of memory, then your choice about heap size can come down to scaling. So how are you going to cope with 100 users? So in there, your choice is essentially monolithic scaling. So you have a small number of 64-bit JVMs running something like WebSphere, which is what we call scaling up. So we increase the heap size so that we can process more transactions concurrently. Or we can cluster, which is being called by some people hoteling, where you have lots and lots of 32-bit JVMs in a clustered environment. And that allows you to scale out. And so when we're talking about clustering JVMs, we're talking about something like WebSphere XD Virtual Enterprise that allows you to cluster and manage one application across many JVMs. Now, there are pros and cons for each. Essentially, having a small number of monolithic servers can reduce your maintenance load, but clustering lots of 32-bit JVMs, that brings a lot of nice things with it. That allows you to include resilience and failover, and you've got your eggs are in them, more baskets. Moving on to slide 22. Now, this slide is titled Future Improvements, but since WebSphere 7 has now shipped, this is the kind of things you can have now. Now, IBM Java 6, which shipped under WebSphere Application 7, which went out the door a month or two ago, that contains some really massive and some very exciting 64-bit performance improvements. And the most exciting thing we've got is this technology called compressed references, which essentially removes object bloat. So it allows you to use 32-bit references on a 64-bit heap. And so the object bloat we saw before just doesn't exist. There are limitations with that, but at the moment the SR2, the Service Refresh 2 that went out under WebSphere, that can support between a 20 and 30 gigabyte heap using 32-bit references. So you can't have hundreds of gigabyte Java heaps, but you can have an awful lot bigger than you can with 32-bit. We've also applied conventional performance analysis and improvement over the Java 6, and what this means is that the performance of the 64-bit runtimes of Java 6 are comparable with the 32-bit runtimes now, so you don't see the enormous performance decrease. Moving on to slide 23, which is our summary. So, essentially, 32-bit runtimes are faster than 64-bit, but you are limited to 1.5 to 3 gigabyte heaps. Now, 64-bit runtimes at Java 5, so that's WebSphere 6.1 or 1.4.2 before, they allow you to have massive heaps, but they are significantly slower, and the object bloat means you're going to use more physical memory to store the same amount of data. So if you're looking at Java 1.4.2 or Java 5, so up to about WebSphere 6.1, most scenarios would recommend 32-bit, unless you need the space with Java heap that 64-bit can give you. However, at Java 6, we brought in compressed references, we brought in some of this really exciting technology that closes the performance gap between 64 and 32-bit. And there, I mean, I think 64-bit is well worth considering there, because you get the good performance, but you also get, you don't have this limitation. So it means that you've got more flexibility when it comes to scaling.
Thank you, Andrew, for a great presentation. At this point, I'm going to open up the lines for question and answers.
And we'll take our first question.
Yes, hi. Okay, I don't know how much this question relates to the topic. I hope it has some relevance to it. In the slide where you mentioned the 64-bit model, and you said that prior to WebSphere version 7, you would expect something in the order of 20% performance lag. Is that true?
Yes.
Something like that? Okay. When you talk about performance, are you talking about I.O. or CPU?
That is going to be CPU. It's going to be your ability to execute Java code. Mm.
Okay. So if you have a multiprocessor machine, like a quad-pumped CPU, is that going to help?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you can compensate for the slowdown at 64-bit at Java 5 and before by, you know, throwing more hardware at it. One thing that's just struck me, I guess, is that some of the multiple core processors will have shared caches between the cores. So, I mean, I haven't investigated this, but I wouldn't be totally surprised if you got a more significant lag on, like, sort of quad cores going from 32 to 64-bit because the caches are divided between the cores. So I think, yes, you can throw hardware at it.
So the JVM will take advantage of their hardware?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it will depend to a certain degree on your application. If your Java application has one thread, then yeah, four cores won't help you. But if you're running something like WebSphere, which has got multiple threads, they'll pad out to fill more CPUs as you plug them in.
Mm. Does it have to be environmentally set by environment variables?
No, it'll... I mean, a Java thread it just manifests as an operating system thread, so if your operating system can take advantage of the hardware, then Java will.
Okay, thanks.
And we'll take our next question.
I have a couple of questions. They all revolve around slide 20. What does that slide look like with App Server 7 Java 6?
With the compressed references switched on, it's within I'm conscious of not releasing much. Really? I think I can safely say it's within a few percent. So we're not talking tens of percent. The difference is less than that. I'm conscious of not accidentally releasing benchmark numbers I shouldn't, I'm afraid.
Okay. It just seemed like a natural question. Given that.
Sure.
When you ran these tests, did you accommodate for the fact that you're running 64 bits, which I think in the prior slides you mentioned that you needed to increase the max address space? Or did you run it with the same 32-bit, 64-bit address spaces?
I believe these were retuned. Mm. So I think these have had the garbage collector retuned. Mm.
So you kept it the same, did you say?
No, it was retuned. So
retuned. Okay. And is it really true that 60% and 70% of your data structures are pointers, or are there other structures that are going to be affected due to the 64-bit, 32-bit change?
Internally, there is a difference in the object headers and some of the way the data is packed.
Okay.
I mean, the things that definitely don't change size are arrays.
Right.
Well, net primitive arrays. So if you've got large byte arrays or large char arrays, which they won't change. Mm.
But you're saying that a lot of internal structures that the JVM uses will be doubled.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of...
Well,
yeah,
70% is almost like doubling everything. So.
Yeah, sure. Mm. I mean, 70% is kind of an upper bound, but it happens with, I suppose, more frequency than we originally thought when we wrote that slide.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is there a more representative one, or do you know? I mean, is there a better number that you have other than 60 or 70%? Because...
Well, 60, 70% is what is, I mean, our guidance is now, if you're going to port from 32, 64-bit, assume the worst and then tune down.
Mm.
And the worst is 70%.
Mm.
Okay. That's it.
Okay.
We have a question.
Yes. For Z Linux, I believe there's a 32-bit switch for the 64-bit Z Linux. Are you familiar with that? It's supposed to be a switch that makes the 64-bit JVMs behave in the same addressing semantics as a 32-bit. It's supposed to make it faster.
Not something I'm aware of.
Okay.
There are no further questions or remarks.
At this time, we will conclude this presentation.